Hi there! We're back with a new installment of SIGGRAPH Spotlight. This time, 2017 VR Village Chair Denise Quinnell is joined by the creators of Neurable, an experience from this summer's showcase that uses neuroscientific insights and advanced machine learning to interpret user intent in virtual and augmented reality. Enjoy!
Okay, welcome to another SIGGRAPH podcast chat. And my name is Denise Quinnell, and I'm the creator of the VR Village at SIGGRAPH, our annual conference, and chaired it from 2015 to 2016. So this year we had a very special guest and project that was shown at the 2017 VR Village. And I have with me on the podcast Ramses Alkaid, who's going to tell us a little bit about Neurable, which is their company, and also what they demoed at SIGGRAPH that was so incredibly cutting edge. So welcome, Ramses, and if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself and Neurable.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure to be here. Just a little background about myself. I have a degree in electrical engineering and a PhD in neuroscience, and I'm the inventor of Neurable's technology. And what Neurable's technology is, it's a brand new system for interpreting brain activity that allows us to do a lot of the things that were done in labs, but in real time. And so what that translates to, at least in SIGGRAPH, is we had a game there where people were able to put on a EEG headset. It's electroencephalography. It just means it records brain activity without any type of surgery. It's all non-invasive. And they were able to basically have telekinetic powers, grab objects, throw them, type into keypads, do, you know, a whole bunch of different interactions. And it was done with their brain activity.
Excellent. Thank you for that background. Now, I think a lot of people wanted to try the demo, but weren't at SIGGRAPH. So how would you describe the demo that was shown for those who weren't there or who didn't get a chance to try it at the time?
So the demo is actually a escape room puzzle game. So you're a child, you wake up, you have telekinetic powers, and it's all hands-free. So you wake up inside a room and there's all these children's toys in front of you. And instead of going up to them and grabbing them, you just basically focus your attention on the object that you want. And then we're able to detect the object, and then it comes to you, and then from there you're able to throw it with your mental abilities at different robots, at different elements, and the whole concept of it is to escape the room.
And there was a lot of people who were really surprised at how quickly this actually worked, and not only that, but how accurately. I know myself, when I tried it, it was very anticipated, and I was still really surprised that it selected the tools that I was thinking about and it did it with relatively low latency. Is that a common thing that people were saying?
Yeah, it's actually a very common response to our technology. And the main reason for that is because a lot of people, you know, who have had experiences with brain-computer interfaces in the past are used to them working very poorly. That's actually been the main hurdle with non-invasive systems. And so as part of my PhD, you know, we solved one of the biggest issues in understanding brain activity, and it allowed us to reduce the latency and increase the accuracy of brain-computer interface technologies to that is beyond what people really expected you could get to. But now, you know, the other side of the coin, too, is that many people haven't used brain technologies before in the past. So, you know, just being able to do it to them was kind of an amazing experience.
Yeah, you mentioned that the actual hardware that you use, like the EEG sensors, can be super invasive. And one thing I know that's come up in the past with, because there's this cloud of mystery around brain interfaces, where people often say, well, is this invasive in the sense that it can read my mind or my thoughts? So what can brain interfaces do and not do?
Yeah, so when I speak about invasive, I mean whether it requires surgery or not. But when
exactly.
People are talking about privacy reasons, and they're talking about, can it read my thoughts? Technically, no, we can't read your thoughts. It's just the data that you get is so generalized and big picture that it's just not possible to do with sensors that are outside of your body, so non-invasive sensors. So really, we don't see too much of a privacy concern. And anybody who tells you that they can do thought control that way is probably someone you should be listening to.
That's a very, very good point. We're not quite there yet, nor maybe we will ever be there. So what inspired this project to begin with? Because before, there's some videos, if you've been following Nearable, you can see that they've been controlling remote control cars with the thoughts. And then now for VR, there might be some similarity or dissimilarity between those two interfaces. So how was this entire game inspired?
What's core to Nearable is its software. So interpreting the brain activity, which means that to us, you know, right now we're using a virtual reality medium, but it doesn't matter if it's virtual reality. It doesn't matter if it's a real object or not. So to us, it's a platform. The game at SIGGRAPH was inspired because what we wanted to do is we wanted to give people the point of view of something that doesn't exist in real life. So right now, everybody in virtual reality is trying to make it feel like you're in real life. So they have controllers they use for your hands, you know, they use gesture, they have all these things. But we wanted to create an experience that can only be witnessed in virtual reality right now. Something that goes beyond the human limitation, which is telekinesis. And so that's what motivated us to use our technology in virtual reality. And then from there, we thought, what would be the best way to convey this? And we came together and we thought, how cool would it be if you could play Star Wars meets Stranger Things and put it together? And so that's really what inspired it. But really, our technology can work both in virtual reality, augmented reality, and even just real life devices. So we've done cars, we've done wheelchairs, we've done all sorts of other devices. But at least for SIGGRAPH, it was trying to create a world and a sensation that has never been experienced before. And VR is a great medium to do that.
So it sounds like Nearable is pretty technology agnostic when it comes to what kind of reality we're going to use. But the core of the company is its software. So is that true that the software can be used pretty much with any tech that you would want to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've done it on a ton of different things. Just to give you some background, when I was doing my PhD, we worked on it for children who have severe cerebral palsy. And they use the technology to answer cognitive assessment exams for clinicians or to communicate to loved ones. We've, like I mentioned earlier, have used it in cars and wheelchairs and toys. It really is the platform for interfacing with your mind. That's what it is. And virtual reality just creates such amazing narratives. And that's really, you know, key to why we push that forward for SIGGRAPH.
Do you think that this changes things? I mean, in terms of accessibility, because we do have this aging population and the rate of having strokes, especially the kind that create total paralysis of speech, they seem to be on the rise as we age and this population ages along with us. Is this maybe a paradigm, this interface could be a paradigm that actually makes this technology more accessible or these experiences more accessible to these populations?
Absolutely. At least for us in the short term, we're, you know, leveraging, you know, different consumer aspects to it to get it out into the public as quickly as possible. But on the laboratory end, there is a lot of medical direction that the team is pursuing. And so at least the way that we see it is that the technology that we've developed has the potential to really transform the lives of millions of people who have severe disabilities while at the same time creating the next human interface for billions of people. So as we move forward and augmented reality becomes more normal in our lives, and it's actually something we wear on our heads with a pair of glasses, the new medium for interaction is going to be brain activity. And that's really where we see our technology transitioning to as we move forward.
So it's not just cool tech. Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, to us, this is going to do what the mouse and keyboard did to the computer, what the touchscreen did to the phone. It's the new interface for the next computing platform.
So in order for the software to work really well, does that mean that you have to collect a lot of data from a lot of different kinds of brains together in a large corpus?
With our current version, no, because we don't use a standard neural network approach. We're changing our machine learning system in the future. Can't really say too much about it, but it is to benefit now from the large amount of data that we've collected. So before SIGGRAPH, we had, you know, all the, just the brain data from our previous lab and then the ones that we got just collecting, you know, doing one-offs. And then our next system, post-SIGGRAPH, we ran about 300 people through the experience. And so now we're actually able to create a really strong database to create an even better system that further expands what we're currently doing.
That's, I mean, to me, like as a researcher, that's super interesting because when you're using actual data, it's just so much more valid. Because a lot of these brain-computer interfaces have been using these theoretical models. And of course, that's what's been leading to a lot of these issues that we've seen in terms of the not just the accuracy, but actual performance of the interface itself.
For sure, for sure. And I think that part of the reason that people are using models is because, you know, as technology improves and as machine learning pipelines change, you know, it's what you're trying to do with the data also changes. And so it's very hard to keep up. But, you know, when you were able to run 400 people in one day, it enables you to use different types of machine learning pipelines to really take advantage of repeatable data.
That's really, really cool. So you collaborated with Studios Futures, which was actually another contributor to VR Village, and you were right next door to them during the SIGGRAPH conference. Can you tell us, did you actually find them just totally randomly to collaborate with? How did that work?
Yeah, that was actually very interesting how we ended up right next to each other and we actually ended up working with one another. It was one of these things where, you know, we did a call for contract work and we found their studio. They do an amazing job when it comes to, you know, their backgrounds in VR. And they really connected with us when it came to the vision of what we were trying to do. And so out of all the different groups that we reached out to, they were the ones that just felt like in line with where we're trying to go in the future. And so we had them develop the game. And then from there, we actually provided the software development kit so that it can integrate Neurable's technology into the actual game they developed. And, you know, from there, we pushed things forward. As for where the game is going, we are planning to work with them for future experiences, but ourselves as a company, we're not a gaming company. We're not a content maker. We developed the platform for human interaction with the brain. And so what we expect is for other studios like Estudio Future and other groups to come to us, license our technology, and help push this technology out so that more people have access to it. People are using them at location-based entertainment centers. People are using it to run their experiences. And so that's really the type of play that we're doing. What we did with the, you know, a studio was mainly to demonstrate the capability of our technology. It's like Nissan doing a concept car.
So that's really interesting because you gave them a software development kit. And I bet there's a whole bunch of people listening to this who are saying, ooh, how do I get a hold of a software development kit? Is that coming up?
Yeah, you can actually go to our website and you can sign up and get sign up for a development kit. We're still working out all the supply chain things that are required to actually get a developer kit out there. So, you know, sign up and then we'll keep you and all the listeners updated as to where things are going. And we're expecting by sometime either next year, either late next year or early 2019, we'll be able to really provide some amazing tools for people to play around with.
Excellent. Yeah, that'll come up pretty soon. So people should get on the list. I really want to know because you seem to be really on the forefront of a lot of this technology, especially just talking to you. It's quite obvious. What do you think is going to be the future of technologies, not just what we see at the conference, but just in general? And this is a totally open question, not necessarily directed at what is the future of consumer technology, but what is the future, period? And don't say self-driving cars.
No, I mean, for me, what's exciting is that the future is closer than we even expect. Right now, you can actually go buy a pair of augmented reality glasses this company called ODG, and they're a little bulky, but they fit on your head. They have 90-degree field of views, 1080p displays. They're a really nice pair of AR glasses. And in addition, there's scientific groups that are working to create EEG electrodes that fit into your ear, just like an ear, like a little earphone.
Oh, wow.
And those earphones, looking at the studies, suggest that they can pick up the signals that we need for our signal processing pipeline. So you can imagine very soon that you could just go to the store, buy one of these pairs of glasses, and put an earphone inside your ear, and now you have the capabilities of your phone with all the capabilities of having an AR system constantly on and able to analyze the world and provide feedback to you all at your fingertips. And people think this is like, you know, 5 to 10 years away. Well, really not that far. It's just, and you can see this in history too. Palm actually came out with a pilot version that was much better technically than an iPhone was 2 years before the iPhone did. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until the capacitive touchscreen with the iPhone came out that everything clicked together and like it blew everybody's minds. And so we're at that phase right now with augmented reality where, yeah, the hardware is still a little bit bulky, but the main thing that's preventing this significant growth and adoption is the fact that the interface and the interface method for the user hasn't combined the hardware naturally yet. And so that's what I think is the missing step. And that's really what to us excites us, which is the future is really close. And it's really, you know, engaged and it's very AI focused. And it's going to be all part of our lives seamlessly integrated.
Excellent. That's super exciting. I know a lot of people are concerned about being too hyper-focused on the tech and not on the actual application of it. But I think that's always a conversation that comes up every time a new technology is proposed. You have a group of folks who are going, oh, well, we don't want to get carried away by the tech and get hyper-concentrated on what the tech can and can't do just because it's new. But it seems like that's really not been a problem here, especially when you're dealing with neurotech or BCI or VR, AR. It's pretty normal and natural to assume that there might be issues of fixating on the tech itself. But in this case, if it opens up this whole new world that we actually had no exposure to or no accessibility for previously, this is such an interesting area.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with how AR lends itself. When you're talking about augmented reality, you're talking about the biggest value add is when you go out and interact. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about a phone, the biggest ad is the fact that so much is available to you in your hand and it's on your phone. You know, that's great and everything. And when you have an AR system, you can still have access to that. But the real value add is the fact that it can integrate to everything that is outside of you too. Mm-hmm. And so I think that opens up a lot of the mentality that previously people thought about technology and how it closes individuals.
And how it connects. Yeah, that's very true. I don't know if 2017 was your first SIGGRAPH. You might have to correct me on that. What I think you've been before, maybe?
I have not been to SIGGRAPH before.
Wow, very
but
cool.
But I definitely know, yeah. But I do know the historical significance of SIGGRAPH and all the innovative technology. So we purposefully chose SIGGRAPH for that reason.
I remember that because you reached out even before the call for submissions closed in 2017, inquiring about how to set this up because it was such a complex demonstration and game, and it was still in progress, which is one of these things that some of the most cutting-edge technology that we get at SIGGRAPH actually isn't quite complete in time for the call for submission. So in this case, and this is really valuable info for the listeners, if you are a person who's working on something like this that's really cutting-edge in development and you know that it'll be ready in time for the SIGGRAPH conference, but maybe 8 months earlier during the call for submissions time, it's not quite at that stage where it could be reviewed yet. It's best just to get in touch directly with the program chair. In this case, if you're submitting to VR Village, you would get in touch with the VR Village chair and talk about what your options are, because it's definitely really important for the conference to be as inclusive as possible in these newer technologies that are still very, very cutting edge and exciting. So I think this question still applies to you, Ramses. Do you have any interesting stories about 2017, which was your first SIGGRAPH? And I ask this because the SIGGRAPH 2018 conference, which will be in Vancouver, its tag is generations. So what is your SIGGRAPH story?
I mean, you covered a good chunk of it, but it was kind of a crazy ride. You know, we knew the significance of SIGGRAPH, and you know, one of the key things was that we wanted to make sure that where we showed off the technology, it would be a moment that really could be held as a historical time where people can look back at it. And SIGGRAPH has shown so many key technologies that we knew that it would just be incredibly important for us as a company to make our stake there. And so I remember Adam on my team shot you guys an email. And if I remember the email correctly, he basically said, look, we have this really awesome technology. It has the potential to change the world, and not like how every app company says it, but like truly change it, but it's not ready yet. You know, and technically we did have, you know, our previous demo, and that's what we raised our first $2 million with, but it was significantly worse than what we showed at SIGGRAPH. It was still a very rough demo at that time. And I remember, you know, we were trying to set up meetings to meet and everything like that. And it came down to, look, we promise you that we're going to have this crazy brain technology that sounds so out there that, like, you know, anyone, you know, rational would just not believe us. But like, seriously, we have a scientific background. We have published papers, and we just got our funding. So this was like a few months after we got our $2 million. And like, we promise you we'll have it done by then. And, you know, you guys were really supportive. You guys kept in touch, making sure that we were making progress, and offered us all the space and all these, you know, basically opportunities that I don't know if we would have gotten if we had just tried to go to CES and then gotten lost in the crowd there. And when we finally had our demo ready and we showed up at SIGGRAPH, and I remember you guys gave me the ability to present at this great panel that was completely packed with people. I just remember doing my presentation, showing the video, and watching half of the audience disappear and go straight to our booth. And then I remember getting a text from Adam, and he's like, we are booked for the next 5 days. And I was like, how is that even possible, right? So we ended up getting about 400 people to try the demo, and there was, you know, hundreds and hundreds more that we just couldn't even get through. And so we ended up getting some, you know, great reception, a lot of great press. But most importantly, this was a good moment to show technically minded people, people who have seen so much EEG tech before in the past, so much brain technology in the past, who become gatekeepers as to whether the technology is legitimate or not, whether it's significantly impactful or not. And then just the press that came out of that validated our technology was huge. And we've been using that momentum to keep our technology moving forward and getting more people on our platform.
That is such a cool story. And I was laughing because I remember that stampede, the mass exodus out of the room after your presentation, because I think you were one of the final presenters, and it's like people couldn't contain themselves. They just, it literally was like a stampede through the door towards the booth. And you also presented on the Sunday, which is the first day of the conference. So yeah, that was it for the rest of the week. That's very cool. Yeah. I remember hearing a lot of comments around the floor of like, have you tried like the Neurable demo? And it's like, oh, dang, it got booked. But it you know, you guys did a great job, and it really did exceed the expectations, which is pretty hard to do because we had pretty high expectations. And and your team exceeded everything that we thought that it would be and a lot more. So it was a really, really valuable example of taking a nice chance and seeing what happens. And I'm sure that the folks who tried it out definitely have their own stories and agree. So that's it for the questions that I've got. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or mention while we're on here?
Yeah, I'd love to share a few more things. First of all, our team is about to grow, and so we're looking for a lot of talented people. And we know that, you know, some of the smartest people in the world listen to this podcast. So, you know, we're looking to grow. We're moving our team to San Francisco, and people who are interested in learning more about technology or getting access to a developer kit or being part of the content makers who are going to create the technology of the future, love to get in touch with you. Please go to our website and, you know, shoot us an email. We have a very receptive team. We're very open for collaboration and working with individuals.
Excellent. And your website was, is it Nearable.com?
That's correct, yes.
There we go, Nearable.com. Very cool. Thanks a lot, Ramses, for being here on the podcast. And maybe we'll see you, and hopefully see you in 2018 in Vancouver. Just jump up in the next pond over now that you're moving, still on the West Coast. And anyone have any questions, feel free to point them towards Ramses Way at Nearable.com and get in touch. And that's all from us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of SIGGRAPH Spotlight. If you like the show, please subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. For more information on the upcoming conference in Vancouver, visit s2018.siggraph.org.